Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hey, this is Bart Everson, creative generalist for faculty development. I wanted to tell you a little bit about a artificial intelligence platform that you may have heard of. It's Notebook LM. Google's advertising it as an experimental model. They call it a personalized AI collaborator that, and I'm quoting here, helps you do your best thinking. Well, the idea is that you upload documents and then it analyzes those, slices and dices them in a bunch of different ways. What I find particularly interesting about this platform is that you can upload a voluminous amount of texts. And for example, I believe the limit might be 52 sources that you can upload. Each one can be a document of, I believe, up to 500,000 words. Now that's a lot of text. And one of the features of this platform has been that it can make podcasts out of them. Well, that's real funny and amusing, and we're going to take a look at that in a moment because we can't resist a little fun. But I just want to say that I think the more interesting features of Notebook LM are sometimes overlooked. You can ask all kinds of questions, analyzing the documents that you've uploaded, including comparing and contrasting different themes. Well, there's a really rich set of features. For example, you could upload an essay by a scholar in some who's doing work that's adjacent to yours, and upload some of your own work and look for a comparison between the two. I mean, looking for common themes. It's even more interesting, I suppose, if the scholar is far afield from what you do. It's got a chat interface, so you can just ask questions, but there's all kinds of built-in prompts and buttons to press, and I just encourage you to explore around with it if you like. It's not just, PDFs that you can upload here. You can put in URLs, and even you can throw up some audio files. So what we did was we took, since we have over 100 episodes of this podcast, we thought it would be interesting to see what kind of podcast Notebook LM generated from our previous episodes. Of course, we have a lot more than the limit allows. So I uploaded 52 randomly selected episodes. And after a bit of hit and miss, I asked the podcast hosts, these artificial people, to focus on critical thinking as a theme, you know, that kind of predominates many of these episodes. Well, here's what they came up with.
Welcome back, everybody. Ready for another deep dive?
Absolutely. Always excited to see what sources we're tackling today.
Well, this time it's all about education. More specifically, learning.
Mm.
You know, how to learn and how to think better, all that good stuff.
Sounds right up our alley.
Yeah. And the listeners sent over this fascinating collection of sources. We've got interviews with professors, some research papers, even a few personal anecdotes. A lot to unpack here.
Yeah, real mix. But you know what's interesting? Even though these sources are all over the place, there's this underlying theme connecting them. This idea of how we learn and how we can be better thinkers.
You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what struck me too. It's like a puzzle with all these different pieces, but they fit together to create this bigger picture of how we approach learning and thinking. So let's dive right in.
Sounds good to me.
We'll start with these interviews from professors. Talk about diverse perspectives. Each one has a unique teaching style and philosophy. Like, one professor really stood out, uses humor to challenge students and create this really rigorous learning environment. You wouldn't think those two things go together, but apparently it's super effective.
Yeah, it reminds us that engagement doesn't mean it can't be challenging.
Exactly. And then we have this other professor who's all about reading across the curriculum, arguing that no matter what you're studying, being able to read and analyze text is crucial.
Can't argue with that. Those skills are fundamental no matter what field you're in.
Absolutely. And of course, we can't ignore the elephant in the room, online learning. It's everywhere these days.
Right. Some of the professors are excited about the possibilities, you know, using multimedia and having access to experts from all over the world. But others are worried about the downsides, like distractions and keeping students focused. It's a real mixed bag.
It is. What about you? What's your experience with online learning been like?
Honestly, it's a bit of both. I've had some amazing online learning experiences that were engaging and really well designed, but I've also had some that felt, I don't know, kind of superficial. I think it really comes down to how much effort both the instructor and the student are putting in.
Totally agree. Which actually brings us to our next topic, the impact of technology. One of the research papers you sent looks at multitasking and how all this tech is affecting our attention spans. And let me tell you, the findings are kind of scary.
Oh, yeah. Definitely some food for thought.
People switch activities every 3 minutes on average. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And they only spend like 10 and a half minutes in a single, quote unquote, working sphere before jumping to something else. Makes you wonder how much we're actually absorbing, you know?
I know, right? With all these notifications and distractions, it's tough to stay focused on one thing for very long. What about you? Do you have any strategies for managing all that and staying on task?
Honestly, I'm still figuring it out. But I think being mindful of how we use technology is key, like setting boundaries, maybe turning off notifications, creating dedicated workspaces, things like that.
Definitely. Small steps can make a big difference.
Totally. But here's the thing. Even though interruptions seem bad for productivity, the research found that they can actually make people work faster.
Really? Yeah, that's interesting. It's like the pressure of an interruption forces you to focus in short bursts.
Exactly. But there's a catch, right? It might make you work faster, but it can also lead to stress and burnout. And who knows about the quality of work when you're rushing?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not always about speed, especially when it comes to deep learning and critical thinking. Sometimes you need to slow down and really process things.
Right, exactly. And that makes me think about how we measure learning in the first place, which is what this next study is all about.
Yeah.
It looks at grade inflation. And get this, it spans like 70 years of data.
Wow, that's a long time.
I know. It's fascinating. And the researchers found that there were these two major waves of grade inflation, one in the 60s and another in the 80s. They think the second wave might be connected to the rise of student evaluations and this whole idea of students as like consumers of education.
Interesting. So instead of seeing themselves as learners who are actively engaged in the process, it's more like they're purchasing a product, a degree.
Exactly. And they're expecting a certain return on their investment, which in this case would be good grades. It really makes me think of the purpose of education, you know. Are we focused on grades and credentials, or are we trying to cultivate a love of learning and a desire to really understand the world?
Yeah, big questions. And it's not an easy answer.
Yeah.
But I think it's a conversation worth having.
For sure. So maybe we need to think beyond traditional classrooms and grades. What about those articles on service learning?
Oh, yeah, that's a really interesting approach. It's all about connecting learning to real-world experiences.
Like that example where students interviewed people at a soup kitchen. They weren't just reading about poverty in a textbook. They were actually engaging with people who were experiencing it firsthand.
Exactly, and that can be incredibly powerful. It's one thing to understand a concept intellectually, but it's a whole other level when you can connect it to real people and real-world situations.
I totally agree. And it's not just about doing good deeds. There's this emphasis on reflection and critical analysis. Like, one professor even challenged students to think about the social justice implications of their service learning experiences.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so hold on to your hats, folks. No, there's nothing wrong with the... I'm just speeding things up. I hope you don't mind. It's just getting a little bit repetitive, and of course this just goes on and on, and I thought in the interest of time I'd just speed it up, but don't worry, I'll set you back down right about here.
Says things like that.
Like that professor who had students create PowerPoint presentations showcasing their research on the history and culture of the Alanya's community, almost as if they were creating a museum exhibit. That's so cool.
I know. It's a great example of how assessment can be integrated into a real-world context, giving students a chance to apply their knowledge and skills in a meaningful way.
And it's not just about the final product, right? It's about the process of research, collaboration, critical thinking, and creative problem solving that goes into it.
Exactly. It's about the learning journey itself, not just the destination.
But authentic assessment can be tricky to implement, right?
Yeah.
It requires a lot of planning and careful consideration.
It does. We need to be clear about our learning goals, develop rubrics that reflect those goals, and be willing to embrace the messiness and unpredictability of real-world learning.
It's a shift in mindset for sure, both for educators and for students.
Right. We need to move away from seeing assessment as simply a way to measure achievement and embrace it as a tool for learning and growth.
It's about recognizing that learning is a continuous process, and assessment should be part of that process.
And it's about recognizing that success looks different for every student. We need to create assessments that are flexible, allow for multiple pathways to demonstrate understanding, and value the unique strengths and challenges of each learner.
So we've talked about critical thinking, technology, mentorship, and even assessment, but there's one more layer to this conversation that I think we need to acknowledge: the power of individual stories.
Yes. All of these sources we've been looking at are full of personal anecdotes, student experiences, and faculty perspectives. Those stories really bring these abstract ideas to life.
They make them relatable and help us connect with the human experience behind the theories and the research.
Exactly. Stories have the power to connect us, inspire us, and help us see the world through different eyes.
It's a reminder that everyone comes to the learning process with their own unique background, their own experiences, their own challenges. And by creating space for those stories to be shared and heard, we create a richer and more inclusive learning environment for everyone.
It's about valuing that diversity of perspectives and recognizing that every individual has something valuable to contribute.
And that recognition, that understanding of the human element of learning, is so crucial for fostering empathy and compassion. And those qualities are more important than ever in today's world.
Absolutely. Several of the sources emphasize the importance of empathy and compassion in education, whether it's through service learning, community engagement, or simply creating a classroom culture of respect and understanding. Those experiences help us broaden our worldview and deepen our appreciation for the interconnectedness of humanity.
It's like expanding our circle of concern beyond ourselves to encompass a wider community, a wider world.
Precisely. And that expanded sense of empathy and compassion is crucial for tackling those complex global challenges we face.
It's about recognizing that we're all in this together, and we have a responsibility to look out for each other and work toward a more just and equitable world.
And that sense of responsibility, that commitment to social justice, is inextricably linked to critical thinking. It's about using our knowledge and understanding to make informed decisions, to challenge injustice, and to create positive change.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
Yeah.
From the classroom, to the community, to the global stage. But it feels like we've only just scratched the surface.
We have. There's always more to explore. But I think we've laid a good foundation.
We've explored the multifaceted nature of critical thinking, the evolving role of technology in education, the power of mentorship and individual stories, and the importance of creating learning environments that foster empathy, compassion, and a sense of social responsibility.
It's a lot to think about, but that's what critical thinking is all about. It's about engaging in continuous learning, challenging assumptions, and seeking deeper understanding.
Let's take a quick break and come back to reflect on some of these key insights and explore what all of this means for our own lives and journeys as learners.
Oh, all right. Hey, it's me again, Bart. You still with me? Yeah, they rambled on a bit there, didn't they? But, of course, they're covering literally dozens of episodes, so there was kind of a lot to talk about. And yes, it was a bit rambly, but given the topic matter, you know, it's hard to avoid. So I thought, all things considered, they did a pretty good job. I'm referring to them as if they're real people, but of course, that's not the case. It's just generated by, you know, it sounds very realistic at times, but it's really just all generated by the Notebook LM artificial intelligence program. Well, let's see how they wrap it all up, shall we? It was so nice of them to give me that little break.
Okay, so we've spent all this time talking about critical thinking and how to be better learners, but what does it all really mean? Like, how do we actually take all these ideas and apply them to our own lives?
I think that's the million-dollar question, right? It's one thing to talk about these concepts, but it's another to actually put them into practice.
Totally. So where do we even begin?
Well, I think it starts with that willingness to be open-minded, to question assumptions, and to embrace the fact that learning is a lifelong process. It's not like we just graduate from school and we're done.
Right. It's about staying curious and being open to new ideas and perspectives, even if they challenge our existing beliefs.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that is recognizing that we all have biases. We all come to the table with our own set of experiences and perspectives that shape how we see the world. And being aware of those biases is the first step towards thinking more critically and objectively.
It's like we have to be willing to constantly examine our own thinking, to ask ourselves, why do I believe this?
Mm-hmm.
What evidence supports this claim? Am I being influenced by my emotions or my preconceived notions?
Exactly. And that kind of self-reflection can be really uncomfortable sometimes, but it's also incredibly valuable because it allows us to identify those blind spots, those areas where our thinking might be clouded by our own biases or assumptions.
It's like we're shining a light on those dark corners of our minds and saying, okay, let's take a closer look at what's going on here.
And once we've done that, once we've acknowledged our own biases, we can start to be more open to other perspectives, to consider alternative explanations, to entertain the possibility that we might be wrong.
And that willingness to be wrong, to admit that we don't have all the answers, is essential for growth, right? I mean, if we're always clinging to our own beliefs, how can we ever learn anything new?
Exactly. Learning requires humility. It requires that willingness to let go of our cherished beliefs when they're no longer serving us.
And that can be tough. It's like we have to be willing to unlearn some of the things we thought we knew.
It is tough, but it's also incredibly liberating. Because when we let go of those rigid beliefs, we open ourselves up to a whole new world of possibilities.
And that's what critical thinking is all about, right? It's about expanding our minds, challenging our assumptions, and constantly seeking deeper understanding.
Exactly. It's about being curious, being skeptical, and being willing to engage in that process of intellectual exploration, even when it's uncomfortable or challenging.
It's about embracing the messiness of learning and recognizing that there are no easy answers.
Right. There's no magic formula for becoming a critical thinker. It's an ongoing process that requires effort and practice.
But it's a process that's worth it. Because ultimately, critical thinking empowers us to make better decisions, to solve problems more effectively, and to live more meaningful and fulfilling lives.
Couldn't agree more. It's about becoming more informed, more engaged, and more responsible citizens of the world.
And that's a pretty great goal to strive for.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've explored the complexities of critical thinking, the challenges and opportunities of the digital age, the power of mentorship and individual stories, and the importance of creating learning environments that foster empathy, compassion, and a sense of social responsibility.
It's been a rich and thought-provoking conversation, and I hope our listeners are leaving feeling inspired and empowered to embrace the power of critical thinking in their own lives.
Me too. So keep those minds sharp, stay curious, and never stop learning.
And remember, the world needs your critical thinking skills now more than ever. So go out there and make a difference.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Well, there you have it. Lots of thoughts, if you can call them thoughts, when they come from an artificial intelligence. Lots of thoughts about our thoughts about critical thinking as reflected in over 50 episodes of this podcast, which has been running for so many years. Again, I wanted to reiterate that this is from Notebook LM, and I've noticed all of the attention Notebook LM gets for this podcast feature because it's fun and goofy and weird, but has a lot of other features. So I'd encourage you to take a look at Notebook LM if you're into that kind of thing. Feed some documents and see what it can do. It's much more than just AI podcasts. Anyhow, until next time, thanks for listening. This is Bart Everson.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.